Welcome, welcome. You're listening to our podcast, Two Massage Therapists and a Microphone. My name is Mark. I'm a registered massage therapist, registered kinesiologist here in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. Season 7, I'm loving it. So far, we've got a couple episodes that went out back to back. I'm digging it, and we've got a real cool guest on the other side of our Zoom today.
Yeah, hey everyone, it's Amanda, and it is... Is this the first one we've actually recorded in 2024? Like, I'm having some brain problems.
So.
Yeah.
I don't know, man.
I think it is, actually.
It's all a blur.
Maybe I'm
New
wrong.
New Year's was a long time ago already.
Yes, it does feel like New Year's Eve was a really long time ago, but it is the first week that the kids are back in school. If you are anywhere in Ontario, you're probably getting dumped with snow and rain and a bunch of messy stuff today. I drove here in very slippery conditions. It was pretty crazy. Yeah, it's getting pretty gross out there. Mm. But the temperatures aren't too bad, and we are talking with Janet today.
The weather report over here.
So
weather
tomorrow...
and traffic on the ones. What's going on?
I don't even want to talk about traffic. We're in Toronto, so that's just a disaster. Anyway, we've got Janet on Zoom, and a little backstory. I met Janet at a conference. I'm going to say it was the one in Winnipeg. Is that right, Janet?
That is correct.
Okay. And it was mind-blowing to me that we hadn't
Massage Therapy Association Manitoba
before.
That one?
Yes. Mm. But it was really crazy to me that we hadn't crossed paths before. She is a registered massage therapist, and she is an educator, and she is based in Ontario. And I was just like, how do I not know you yet? And can I get to know you? So I did a little bit of filming in one of the classes she was teaching on oncology massage, which was really interesting. And since then, we've set up some stuff. I think that, you know, we can talk about this after, but her course is actually going to be coming to Toronto, and they're renting out Con Ed Institute to run the course. So that's pretty exciting. But Mark said, why haven't we had Janet on the podcast? And I was like, that's another good question. Why haven't we? So, you know, just a few short months later, almost a year later, here she is to talk about herself and all the cool stuff she's doing. So Janet, thanks for hanging out with us today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on your podcast.
Well, let's start with some introductions for anybody who doesn't know you, because like I said, I didn't before April of last year. Tell us a little bit about yourself, what you were doing before massage, if there was a previous career, how you got into massage, and you know, how long you've been doing it, what your practice is like, all that fun stuff.
All right. It's a long story at this point in my life. So I've been massaging for about 17 years. And prior to becoming a massage therapist, I was a social worker. And I had studied social work. It was my dream. And I got into it. And after 5 years, I was so miserable. I could barely get through my days.
I'm interrupting your introduction. Right there.
Unbelievable.
I know. I'm sorry. I've heard this from more than one person who's gone into social work. Can you tell me what it was that was making you miserable in a short 5-year career?
I absolutely can. So I loved working with the clients, and I found that I had an incredible tolerance for all that humans go through, all the difficulties we face. I never felt burnout for dealing with my clients. However, I got very, very quickly burned out dealing with the bureaucratic infrastructure and how it's there for a function, but it never really seemed to adequately meet the needs of the clients. So I just knew that I couldn't continue doing that. I was turning 30, and I looked ahead to the social workers I knew who were in their 50s, and I thought, I do not want to be those people. Mm. So I stopped. And I needed a really short, sharp shock. So I went to Japan to teach English, and I went for a year. My friends told me I'd probably last maybe 5 minutes, and I ended up staying for 3 years. Mm. Oh, and that was three of the most incredible years of my life, for sure. After Japan, I spent 7 months traveling around Asia and 4 months by bicycle. So I bicycled through South Korea, parts of China and Vietnam. And then when I got back to Ottawa, I knew for sure that there was no way I could work in an office ever again or within a really large institution. So I looked into the trades, electrician, plumber, and nothing seemed to fit. And then a friend said, why don't you become a massage therapist? And although it sounds a little corny, it was really, truly a light bulb moment. It was like, that's it. I started my training, and it took me a whopping 7 or 8 years to complete the program, if you can believe it. And during those 7 or 8 years, I never once heard of oncology massage. It never crossed my path.
So wait, I have to ask again.
Yeah.
Why 7 or 8 years? Like, was this just you doing it part time, or were you like starting and stopping? Were you having doubts? Like, for, you know, a typically 2 year program, 7 or 8 years seems very drawn out. I know I have so many questions too, but
I know it's a little extensive. So in my first year, my partner and I decided to start a family. So we did so. And then 5 weeks before my due date, at an ultrasound, we found out we were having not one baby, but two.
Oh my.
So that changed things. And then there were many, many family events besides having two little babies. Both parents had strokes, multiple deaths in my immediate family. So every time I tried to go back to school, there was just something that got in my way, and it was virtually impossible. Mm-hmm. So I kept my eye on the goal and I got there, but it took a long, long time. And by the end, I have to say, I didn't even know if I liked massage. So I was deeply relieved to find out that I not just liked it, but I really loved it.
Is that your personality, Janet, that like no matter what, you're going to finish what you've started? Because I can imagine many people with all of these roadblocks and obstacles at some point saying, fuck it. Like, I can't do this.
I don't know if I'd say fuck it. That's just not something I would say.
Oh, right. But right.
I have to say it crossed my mind more times than I can say. I don't know what made me carry on, Amanda and Mark. I just did. And now it's a long time ago, and I'm really glad I did. And one thing that kept on crossing through my mind at the time was the time was going to pass, and I may as well use that time for something. So even if I got only one course in a year, that had to be enough for that year, because there were just so many other demands on my time between raising kids and seeing my parents through to the end of life. That's just the way it was. There's nothing I could do about it. Mm-hmm.
So can we backtrack to the social work for a sec?
Sure.
Was there any sense or feelings of I'm abandoning people when I'm leaving this work?
That's a good question. And that kind of pertains to our work as massage therapists as well. No, I think it was pure survival at that point. I simply knew I couldn't do it and be in any way remotely physically or emotionally healthy continuing in social work. So it was kind of a non-decision.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because I'd imagine sometimes you would feel like, I mean, if you are at a breaking point, you're at a breaking point, right?
Yeah.
But then, you know, I don't know, because you hear massage therapists all the time where they're like, oh, I feel like even just changing a location of their practice, you know, they kind of have this internal freak out. Like,
yeah.
I feel like I'm abandoning my clients, or I'm abandoning all these people that I feel like they might be dependent on me a little bit, even though that might not be the best way to look at it.
Do you think this is somewhat of a projection? Because Mark went through this crisis when he left teaching, honestly, because there were students who were like, you can't leave us.
You know what made me think about this more? It's I was listening to the I went to a clinic in Brampton, which is probably about a half hour, 40-minute drive from our office yesterday to do a meeting with this really cool dude. He's actually been on our podcast before. And as I'm driving, I'm listening to the radio, and they're talking about a shortage of nurses and doctors on the radio. And I'm thinking to myself, do all of these nurses and doctors that are leaving the profession because they have some sort of burnout, or they're like, I just can't do this anymore, do any of them feel a sense of abandonment? Do any of them feel like, oh man, like I'm contributing to this crisis, because you're hearing it as a crisis of not enough healthcare workers, frontline healthcare workers like doctors and nurses? So that's what kind of drew me to like, do you have that sense of abandonment when you're, but I guess when you're at the breaking point, you're at the breaking point, and that's all that matters is
survival. So it's definitely a projection. Mark's family doctor literally abandoned him anyway.
Yeah, for sure. And also I knew that there'd be some other 25-year-old coming through to take my place. Like I knew that there was going to be a wave of people. I wasn't leaving the job empty, right? For sure.
And yeah, that's one of the things whenever we see RMTs talk about that in the Facebook groups, I'm like, you know, you're not abandoning them. There's always the opportunity for care. There's 15,000 of us in Ontario. That person will be taken care of if they still want to be taken care
of.
And
to Janet's point, if she wasn't going to be physically or emotionally capable of doing the job 20 years from when she decided to leave, why not allow somebody who is better suited for that job? Mm-hmm. The patients are ultimately, or the clients in that case, are going to get better care with somebody who is better suited to that job. She recognized in herself, this is not for me. And I think, sadly, it takes some people a lot longer in their life to realize that they've been holding on to something, either be, you know, complacency, comfort, whatever it is, that really isn't serving them well. So, I mean, good for you in recognizing before the age of 30 that, like, this is not my life.
Yeah, it wasn't easy. It was tough because there's that sense of I'd done the training, I'd put so much into it, I'd gone to university for it. So there's that, also that feeling that you're supposed to continue with whatever you started. Mm. Yeah. And that was a really great lesson for me to say, okay, you don't have to do that anymore. Yeah, it was a biggie. It wasn't small.
Any feelings of, I failed at this thing? That came along with
it. Funny. No, I don't feel that. I think it was just so clear. Not that I haven't felt that for other things that I've let go, but no, that was, it was just crystal clear that it couldn't continue.
I know that feeling, and I love that feeling. That
the feeling that I failed?
No, the feeling of when you know.
I know.
Like, yeah, it's just like, this is.
You don't even look back.
Yep, I'm done.
All rear view mirror.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's that inner voice, and I find the more you practice listening to it, the more, the easier it is just to follow it, because it's always the guide.
When you say practice listening to it, is it an active process of practicing being self-aware, or is it just a matter of just going through it and that's what you mean by practice?
No, I think I practice it all the time, just making sure that what I'm doing is comfortable, right? And that even shows up in our work as RMTs as well. When working with clients, when working with people who ask more than perhaps I have to give, just to make sure that what I'm giving is from an honest place as much as possible.
Self-awareness easy for you, or is it a challenge?
Oh, goodness. I don't think I'm prepared for that question. Is self-awareness easy for me? I think it gets easier every year.
Yeah. I think age definitely helps.
Sure does.
The realization that I'm not saying this is true for you. I'm just saying this is, you know, true for me and possibly for some other people. I think there comes a point in your life when you realize that certain things you've been trying to make yourself believe. And when you finally say, like, I'm completely lying to myself and that's not who I am, then you can focus on, okay, who am I actually? What do I actually want to do? What makes sense for me? What am I good at? That didn't happen for me until I was, you know, well into my 30s, where I was like, okay, maybe I'm not this way. But you spend years trying to make yourself believe it and you become very good at masking and pretending to be.
Or was it that you were that way? You grew in a different direction. And then you're now
both
more
are true,
accepting
I think.
Of your growth.
Both are true, because the longer you pretend to be something, you really do grow into that thing. So both of those things are true. But, you know, when Janet said...
This is very philosophical,
it
huh?
is very philosophical.
Who'd have thunk?
Although my philosophy classes in university were some of my favorite. I really loved the concept of going to a class where we could talk in circles, never have any answers, but I felt like I learned so much. I was freaking fantastic. Loved philosophy. Any philosophers
that's
out there
great.
Are going to be so
mad. Actually,
right,
I use a little tool in my courses. I call it the thought bubble, and I want people to always be aware of what's in their thought bubble and tell how that's different from what they're actually saying, so that they're always, it just sort of helps with the self-awareness that, you know, your thought bubble's up there. It may be saying something that's completely socially inappropriate. So you want to keep it in your thought bubble, but it's really important to know that it's in there.
I have a constant thought bubble.
Yeah.
Is it full They're of fun. Inappropriate things, your thought bubble?
Is it full of inappropriate things? No. I just learned that not everybody does what I do, though. So this is, you know, related to the thought bubble, where I have like little conversations in my head. Like, let's say I'm doing a podcast and somebody's speaking. Sometimes when they're speaking, like, I am listening, but I'm thinking like other things that I might want to ask them based on what they've just said. And then I start thinking about, well, that conversation might go that way, but this one might be more, like, I literally have practice conversations in my mind.
And I imagine an old school Roman guard standing at the gate, allowing certain things to leave and you got to stay inside.
You don't say that out loud, not in public spaces. Yeah, absolutely.
It sounds like you're really imaginative though and creative, Amanda, right? That the thoughts going all the time.
All the time. I think that's why writing comes easy to me, because when I'm sitting there and I've got the thought bubble, then stuff just starts coming out. Then I can read it back. And like you said, kind of compare it with what's in my head, what went on the paper, did that translate well? Like, I actually really love the process of writing. So I guess that's where the creativity comes out of my thought bubbles. I can't stop saying thought bubble. Oh my God. Anyway.
Right? It's stuck now, isn't it?
It is very stuck. Sorry, we did cut you off there. So you took a little bit of extra time to go through massage school because of all of this stuff. But, you know, the last question I asked was, are you that person that just perseveres and you don't even know why you did that, but you're happy you did? When you were going through the courses, you said you got to a point where you weren't even sure that you liked massage anymore. When did that uncertainty go away? Was that like while still in school? Was that after graduation? That was that once you started working? Was that once you got into a niche? Like, when did you really realize, no, I do in fact like this. Actually, I love this profession or this career for me.
Yeah. As soon as I started working, I was aware that I really loved it. And I was also aware of just how powerful and really undefined is the work that we do. And when I was writing with Rebecca Sturgeon, the textbook on oncology massage, that was one of the biggest things is how do you define massage? And I still can't do it. So I don't know if you can help me with that.
How do you define massage?
Don't look at me. I'm stupid.
Well, I mean, yeah, because it encompasses so many things. You have to, you know, we hear all the time from therapists on the podcast. And I'm glad that it seems that majority of massage therapists we deal with understand that yes, we are in the category of body workers, but we're treating humans. And that has that goes into the definition. Because when you're talking about touch, you have to include things like intent. We have to actually be able to read people and understand what they might need in a certain day versus just looking at certain injuries, depending on what type of setting you're in. You know, somebody who does oncology massage is going to have a very different type of intake and intent than somebody who's doing sports therapy. Like, massage actually is a huge umbrella of a whole bunch of different things.
Then, I'm curious then, how do both of you guys think, what do you guys think about the definition under the scope of practice for the College of Massage Therapists of Ontario? I'm going to assume you feel that things are missing from that when you guys are defining massage.
Yeah, so I think it's strictly clinical and it's very concrete. And we do that, but we also do so much more, like Amanda was saying, like reading the room, reading the client, reading their body, feeling the tension in their body that might be muscle tension that we can help to relieve, and some kinds of muscle tension that might be better off with a meditation app just to bring the nervous system down. We get really skilled at that big, big picture of working with someone.
Yeah. And I think the great thing about what we do, you know, we constantly talk about the fact that massage therapists spend more time with their clients than almost any other type of practitioner, like the physio, the chiropractor. They don't spend quite as much time with the people. So the interesting thing is when you have somebody who you see all the time and you see for long periods of time, it's very easy after a certain amount of time to just know instinctively without them even saying anything, like this person, like their tissue's responding differently today. They're different today. Like just something is different about them today. And then it can sometimes change your line of questioning or the way you're going to treat that day. You know, you might do something that's wasn't in the treatment plan for that day, you know, obviously discussing with them first, like this is what we're going to do today instead. Yeah, it's very interesting. But I mean, the definition, you asked whether or not I think it's correct.
Do you think that scope of practice does well for a definition?
I mean, it does in the sense that it's very general. Like assessment, treatment, manipulation of soft tissue, like it is what we do. Mm-hmm. We are not going to incorporate in that definition. I think the reason we're not going to incorporate is because then it's like it becomes very gray. You're not going to talk about things like psychology because that's like really not within our scope of practice. Yes, that like enters the treatment room because you're dealing with people and it can't not. But I mean, at the core of what we do, we're working with people's bodies, right? Yes, we're working with people, but through working with their body. Did that make sense?
Made sense to me.
Okay, thank you.
It does make sense. And I think the big question is, I know you've had some podcasts recently on education and how can we incorporate that awareness in education? I know that's a huge question. I don't expect an answer, but I think we at least need to be talking about it when people are getting their basic massage education. It's a toughie.
Do you think the therapeutic relationships courses that exist right now are sufficient enough? Or do you like have ideas of how we could improve them?
I'm not sure exactly what's available out there. I think what maybe is missing is an awareness in our profession of how critical that therapeutic relationship or alliance is. And I think we have to bring that conversation to the forefront to make sure that our clients are getting the best care, but also that we're protecting ourselves and not getting too burned out.
Mm-hmm. Have you experienced burned out? Well, I speak English. Have you experienced burnout in your 17 years as a massage therapist or anything close to burnout? Have you felt like you were on the verge of it?
I don't think I have. And that's partly because of my experience in social work that I'm really aware when those pressures start to build and I manage them. And also, I've never worked 5 days a week. I worked throughout raising my kids and seeing my parents to the end of life. So I always worked part-time, and I think that helped a lot as well.
Mm-hmm. I want to talk about, because you've brought it up a couple times now. So for anyone listening, they are getting the idea that Janet's focus in practice is oncology massage. How does one get from, you know, going through massage therapy school where everything is very basic? You come out with basic knowledge on how to be safe and somewhat effective. Yeah, you're a good novice. Exactly. How do you go from that? And like, what was your first clinic job? What kind of networking? Like, how does this happen? Did it fall into your lap, or did you come out of school with the intent that I would like to treat this population that I feel is being underserved?
Not a clue, I have to tell you. So after graduation, I worked in a variety of massage therapy clinics. And after 4 or 5 years, I started my own small practice. And I was working there part-time. And then the newly opened Ottawa Integrative Cancer Center was advertising for massage therapist. And I thought, I really have no interest in working with people living with cancer, going through cancer treatment. But the job ad came up again, and it actually changed it. So all of the continuing ed I had done was in the job ad. So my husband said, he got to apply just to go see. So I did. And I went for the interview. The night before the interview, I Googled massage and cancer, thinking I'd have maybe 5 or 10 minutes to keep me busy looking at that. And I have to tell you, like 10 years later, whatever it is now, I'm still researching and learning all the time. I had no idea how complex it could be. And I really had no idea how much we could offer. So I started working there. And I really fell in love not only with what we could offer, but also working in an integrated oncology milieu where I worked with naturopaths and I worked with traditional Chinese medicine, acupuncture, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I got really excited. And I perhaps could tell you about my very, very first client there who Yes. had been given 8 sessions by her insurance company to help her get back to work. So I had 8 weekly or biweekly sessions to work with her. And this client brought everything to our sessions. So she was having powerful emotional reactions to being diagnosed with cancer and to the treatment. She was absolutely terrified of being of cancer reoccurrence, because at this point she had completed her treatment. And she was afraid of being touched because she thought that I might palpate a lump again and that it would be a sign of more cancer. So she had a lot of emotional fear. She had a lot of physical restrictions, like tightness across her chest after lumpectomy and radiation, and her shoulder mobility was impacted. And she also had huge lifestyle impact from the cancer treatments. She had 5 kids, all of whom she was homeschooling. So there was everything that she brought into this session, for which I have to say I was deeply unprepared for. So that first session with her, we spent about 30 minutes talking, and she was literally curled up in a chair holding her body tight. There was no way she could get onto the table until we had talked through everything that she was going through. And that massage that day was 30 minutes fully dressed on the table, gentle shoulder and neck. So in terms of her treatment goals or her insurance company's goals for her, very little was achieved except for sort of establishing that therapeutic relationship. The second massage, I was able to work on her back, neck, and shoulders. And by the third massage, we were able to start talking about and do a little assessment of the lumpectomy scar at that time. And while I was doing that, it was the first time I'd ever palpated the density in tissue from radiation treatment. And I'm going to tell you how naive I was. I thought I had discovered it. I thought there's the first. I know it's embarrassing. So, of course, I went home and I looked up radiation and tissue density or whatever I looked up. And that's when I really started to learn a lot. So for the next 4 to 8 sessions that she had, we did really gentle work around the lumpectomy scar and the entire radiation field, which went from sort of her rib cage up to her neck and across her shoulder. And I was gobsmacked by how gentle manual therapy could impact the tissues. And we were able, actually, by the end of our 8 sessions together to get her to self-massage the area, which was important not only for her acceptance of her altered body, but also so that she could start to feel the area in case there was another lump that developed. So this woman in those 8 sessions, she was my education. She was my ground zero of learning a lot about oncology massage and how much we have to offer. So it was really exciting. And I never stopped getting excited about that. And I never do, even now, all these years later.
You described it as being feeling deeply unprepared. Is there ever a time where you feel 100% prepared?
That is such a good question. Absolutely never. And I think with all massage and oncology massages in there, we never know for sure. We may treat one client with frozen shoulder effectively and they get great results. And we might work with someone else and they don't. So we never know exactly what all the factors are that make a treatment successful, if you will. And I don't ever feel 100% sure. And I'm kind of glad about that because it keeps me on my toes and it keeps me thinking and it keeps me really curious and aware of what each client's bringing in.
So many thought bubbles, by the way, while she was speaking.
Can I get out one thought
bubble? You absolutely can, because I have so many.
For someone listening that has no idea, can you describe a little bit of what that tissue density is like?
Right. So, I think the best description I have, there are two that come to mind. One is it can feel like bubble wrap under the skin, and the other, it can feel leathery.
Mm. Yeah.
And it's a broad area because the radiation field is typically quite broad. So it's a fairly extensive area, not just around exactly where the tumor was removed, but all the area around in an attempt to kill any of the cancer cells that may have traveled from that original tumor. And of course, you know, all kinds of people have all kinds of tissue density. So if I'm not sure if it's from radiation or not, then I usually palpate on the other side of the body that didn't receive the radiation, and it becomes super clear very quickly.
Right.
So I just want to clarify, the reason I giggled when you said you thought you had discovered it was not because I was laughing in like secondhand embarrassment with you. It's because I've actually only treated it that I can remember in my 14 years, I think. I'm losing track. I've only actually ever treated 2 patients that were going through cancer treatments, or one of them had just completed, and one who I think maybe was still anyway. And I remember actually when I first felt something similar to what you're describing on the second person, I remember in my mind thinking like, I don't understand what I'm feeling here right now.
Yeah.
And so when you're like, I thought I had discovered it, in that moment, I was like, what is this? And I had to also try to figure out like, is this normal? What does it feel like on the other side? Like it was definitely a learning moment. So that's why I giggled, not because you thought you invented it. Because
I didn't
went
think
back
it
to that moment. I was like,
but I think
yeah.
It's really important for us as massage therapists to talk about what we feel like. It's
absolutely
so basic, because that's what we do all day. We feel stuff, but talk about what we feel and talk about what we don't know. Like, I don't know what this is and what could this be? And just open that conversation as well, because we don't know so much.
Yeah, absolutely. So the other thought bubbles that I was having when you had mentioned about your first patient being a little bit apprehensive about you possibly palpating other tumors, I literally had a shiver go through my entire body, because when I was younger, you know how like your doctors and you'd see commercials on TV, whatever, they tell you to do like self breast exams? Like, no way. The thought of it sent cringy, like queasy, like I just wanted to invert my entire body and like roll up into a turtle shell. Like, no, I'm not doing that.
That's very descriptive.
Yes, that's how it felt. I'm like, please just like, no, I cannot do that. And the main reason was that I was afraid of possibly finding something, you know, which is the point is if you if you do these self-exams, you should be doing it so that if you find something, you can investigate. But I was like, I don't even want to think about it. I don't want to know about it. And so even when I would hear somebody talk about that, or if I was at a doctor and they were doing an exam, that same feeling of like, can I just please get in my shell? Like, I don't want this happening anymore. And I think actually treating a couple of people who I've treated somebody who's had a double mastectomy. I've now treated, like I said, a couple people going through cancer treatments, and I've definitely gotten less like shell-like about it. But mm-hmm. I understood when you were talking about your patient, I'm like, I understand that feeling. It's like, I don't want to know. Like, this is already so traumatic. I don't want to know.
I get absolutely. It 100%.
Yeah.
I can't for the life of me, I can't remember who I was having this discussion with. But for me, I'm so emotionally weak that just knowledge of something like this would probably throw me over the fucking edge. I'm not going to lie. and for me, it's almost right. like ignorance is bliss. Like the less I know and I can just go about my days, even though my days might be shitty, you know what I mean? But I think I'm just emotionally weak that way. I would not be able to function well. You know this. I would not be able to function well. I wear everything on my sleeve. Everybody in the world would know, like, something's wrong with this guy. He's not quite there. And I just probably wouldn't be able to function well.
I was just looking for a better term than emotionally weak. I'm not disagreeing that
you
are not the type of person that can get bad news and shelf it and do something else.
No.
I know that.
It lives in the forefront of my mind 24/7.
That's transparency. I think it's a great quality. You're not concealing everything. And I think it really highlights, too, what our clients who are perhaps waiting for the possibility of a cancer diagnosis are going through. Like, we use the word fear, which is such a simple word, but fear, like where you can't sleep, fear where you can't eat, where you can't digest, where you can't talk to people. Like, it can be absolutely terrorizing to the person.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a big deal.
The other things I was thinking about when you were speaking, Janet, you said, you know, this ad came up for this cancer center in Ottawa. Did you say that was 10 years ago?
Ish. Yeah. Let's say 10-ish.
So
yeah.
I went to massage school in 2008 is when I started. And I don't know if this was just my school or if this was common practice, but I remember being in school, and when we discussed cancer, it was still the discussion of like, don't do these certain things with a client who has cancer, always get clearance from their oncologist, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on that? Is that being overly conservative? Should people who are going through cancer treatments have access to the same type of care as all of us, or should they be seeing somebody who has special training?
Can we pause there really quick?
Yes.
Because this is going to piggyback onto that, but this one might happen first. Because you have a whole bunch of massage therapists taking your courses, you must hear all of the stuff that they were taught in school, and maybe you can throw into the mix along with Amanda's question.
Some myth busting.
Yeah, some of the stuff that you would hear these participants in your classes say, this is what I was taught in school, and so on.
Yeah, that's a great one. So I think the biggest myth that still persists is that massage can spread cancer.
Yes.
So the way I address that is the way I address absolutely everything in the training and in the textbook is get your evidence and know what you're talking about. So it's not enough to say, oh, that's not true. We need to know for ourselves, for our own comfort in working with someone with cancer, as well as for our clients. And I do get asked probably about 6 or 7 times a year by clients if massage can impact the spread of cancer. So we want to understand the process of spread or metastasis of cancer and all of the factors that impact that, and how massage is just a tiny little thing in the face of that huge biochemical reaction going on in the body. Mm-hmm. So personally, I don't have any concerns about massage spreading cancer any more than going for a brisk walk would spread cancer, or a swim, or any other kind of exercise. But we need to be prepared for that as massage therapists, because at some point your clients will ask.
Yeah.
That's the biggest myth that I think needs to be busted.
Yeah. And that's, like I said, when I was in school in 2008, I remember that discussion very clearly of like, we need to be careful because massage can spread cancer. So I started my career as a massage therapist thinking like, God, I hope I don't get a client who has cancer, because I would be incredibly unprepared for that.
Totally,
situation.
But it's a great point. You don't actually want to work with the people because you don't know enough. And that's why My point is, you don't have to be oncology massage trained, because it's not really of interest for all of us, but we all should be oncology massage aware. And I really hope that I'm looking forward to the day where, as part of our basic training, we at least understand some of these basic principles around how to adapt a massage for someone living with cancer. And also to say, you know what, this is kind of beyond my comfort. I'm going to refer you to someone who is more comfortable working with this. Both are good. I still do that sometimes today.
Mm-hmm. So you teach courses right across Canada, right?
That's the goal. Yeah. I work for a company in Calgary called Seminars for Health. So, mm-hmm. so far I've been teaching in Calgary and Edmonton and in Winnipeg. And starting in 2024, I'm so excited. We're going to be in Toronto, and in August we'll be in Ottawa.
Do you notice a difference from province to province with general information or knowledge about oncology massage? Or is it kind of just consistent across the board?
Yeah. I don't think I know enough yet, Mark, to answer that. Come back to me next year, I'll tell you.
Sounds good.
She's got to travel more.
Yeah, I'm in.
When you started working with the cancer patients at this center in Ottawa, like you just told us about your first client, was there ever a moment that you felt, maybe I'm in over my head? Or was it like what you described before, where it was exciting and you just wanted to learn more and continuously improve yourself so that you could help these clients?
Yeah, I really felt both. You know, I'm by nature quite impulsive, and I can move forward. I don't get stuck on things. However, that fear of perhaps doing harm, I think it kept me honest, it kept me curious, it kept me researching, and it kept me always offering treatments that started slow and at a very slow progression, so that we could really see how the client responded to the work I was doing, as opposed to trying to get big results quickly and perhaps overwhelming their body physically and emotionally, etc. So a bit of both. I actually did take some training too in the States with Tracy Walton, who's a well-known oncology massage therapist out of Boston. And that was an incredible, beautiful experience in North Carolina. But it was really based on safe massage. So I incorporate that in my courses, but I really also wanted to move that beyond that and get into effective and rehabilitative massage, because we have so much to offer in that sphere.
You kind of started to answer my next question, actually. You mentioned that you have written a textbook, and I mean, I already knew that, but some listeners may not know that. How did you go about, from that first job and that first patient, how did you go about researching and learning? So, you know, you just told us about one course, but were there many different courses you took? Where were you getting your information from? And then how does that lead you to actually writing a textbook and developing your own oncology massage courses?
Right. So everything in my life is very circuitous. So this as well. I researched all the time. I set up for Google alerts for research related to oncology massage. And through that, I started to know who was doing the big research and who were sort of the players in the field. I followed them. I listened to webinars, like anything that was available, I would read or listen to. And I took, Kathy Ryan is a massage therapist out of BC, and she wrote Traumatic Scar Tissue Management, a textbook. So I took her course, which was really great. And by chance, her publisher asked her if she knew of anyone who was working in the field of oncology massage and would be interested in writing a book on it. So I got that email from Kathy on a nasty, cold, rainy November night, and it was really like a dream come true moment. And I thought, I would love to do this. So it was very, very scary to take on a project like that. It took a year from my first contact with the publisher to actually signing a contract with them. They were very clear that I needed an American co-author. So Rebecca and I worked together on this. And then we had 18 months to actually research and put together the whole book. We divided all of the subject matters that I had put together had been approved by the publisher. And we did 50-50 work. And every 2 weeks we would get together on Skype. That's how long ago it was. And we would talk about our work and we would support each other. And finally we submitted it and it became a book. And I can't tell you, it was just a little scary to have that out there in the world. but fun. I loved the process.
Did you and Rebecca know each other prior to co-authoring this book?
Nope. We met on Skype, and then we didn't meet until about 6 months into the process. And we've only met physically once in that whole time.
I want to ask Mark a question.
Oh my God.
I know. I'm sorry. He like looked at me like, what? You don't ask me a question. Sometimes I do. But I'm listening to Janet's story of like being asked. Right. So that's where I'm going with that.
It's crazy.
Her being asked to write a book, I was putting myself in her shoes in that moment of being like both this excited, overwhelmed, terrified, like all of these emotions all together. Like, yes, I would love to do it, but oh my God, then it's going to be out there. Then I'm putting myself up for criticism. What if I don't perform? And you said something recently. I won't go into too much detail because it's not public yet, but Mark and I have been asked to work on, not just us, our other partners as well. We've been asked to work on a project, and the people we're going to be working with, you know, they want to discuss all of these details. And part of the our end of the contract, you know, as Mark and I are discussing what we would expect from them, he said to me the other day, the basic gist of it was, I don't want to ask for too much because I don't want the pressure of having to make this thing to be amazing. Like, what if I don't meet their expectations? And I was like, okay.
Like, I get it, Mark. I get it totally.
So I just want to ask you, like, when you're listening to her, like, is that more what you felt? Like, is they're coming, like, normally you work on projects and you're the creative, but now Someone's coming to you and saying, hey, I have this idea. What can you do with it? Was that like an excitement, but like pressure feeling when they approached you about it?
I always, in a scenario like this, I will always try to position myself so I feel the least amount of pressure. So if you're going to pay me for a project like that, then I will find a way to, let's not talk money, or let's talk less money, let's talk something else. Do you know what I mean? And that way, whatever value you place on that dollar in return for that product is been mitigated somehow, if that makes sense. Now, that doesn't change the effort that I'll put into it, but I feel like I position it that way for that purpose a lot of the time. And that way, I feel like I maintain a lot of creative control.
Well, that's the way I originally looked at it, thinking that maybe you just wanted a little more of the creative control.
Well, that's
control.
A big part of it.
And then when Janet said that, I was like, is it too much pressure?
If someone comes up to me and says, I'm going to pay $10,000 to do this, I'm like, oh, fuck, now I got to fucking really deliver on exactly what you want, right? Versus if they're like, oh, we bargain this down. Okay, why don't you pay me $5,000 for this, and then we'll talk about points on the back end or whatever the case is. Then I'm like, okay. You're not paying so much up front for it. So I feel like I can maintain a little bit more creative control versus you're knocking on my door every 2 seconds saying, can you make it do this? Can you make it look like this? Can you make it sound like this? You see what I'm saying?
So it was more about your ability to maintain creative control.
But it is also pressure, but a lot of it is creative control.
Got it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting. I didn't have the pressure of money because I think if I do my calculations correctly, I'm down to about 10 cents an hour for all the effort I put in. And that's over the rest of my lifetime.
10 cents an hour. You can retire, my friend.
What is the motivation behind, what are all of the little pieces of the motivation behind wanting to do a book? Because people that write books fascinate the hell out of me.
Right. Well, I have to tell you, it was, I had three big goals when I was a kid, and writing a book was one. So it was kind of that simple. It was just something I always wanted to do. And then, you know, I questioned a lot. Am I the person to do this? Because why me? There's so many other people who know so much more and are very well established. And so I asked the publisher that, and she said, we asked them and they weren't interested. No, third, fourth, fifth choice, but that's okay. I got the opportunity. Also, I had spent so much time and so much effort learning so much, and I kind of thought maybe I could help other massage therapists bypass that extremely laborious process. And so I created a book that I wish I had had when I was starting out in oncology massage. We organize it along biomedical cancer treatments, largely, so your chemotherapy, surgery, radiation, etc. So you don't have to read it cover to cover. You can use it as a resource in your practice. So if someone comes in and they've had chemotherapy, you can go through that chapter and learn some of the things that your client's going to be going through and some of the things you need to be careful for in the treatment. So it's really, really practical, which is ultimately what we as massage therapists are.
Oh yeah, that is exactly the type of thing somebody like me needs. I know that sometimes I just need like a quick, like the way I have my notes from massage school, I still have them, but the way I have them organized, it's in such a way that if I just need to look up something really quick, I can literally pull out like this particular page and just look, okay, yeah, I'm good. So having a textbook that's organized in that way, okay, I'm seeing someone who has just started chemotherapy, let's see what I need to know, just so I can feel a little more confident going into that treatment. And like you said, not every therapist needs to specifically understand oncology massage, but understanding the different experiences that your patients are going through, I think that is super helpful, because like we started the episode, massage is not necessarily just working on their body, but you're working with a person. So understanding somewhat of the experience
can
will be really helpful.
Can I ask you guys a question? Sure. Just hit me right now. Yes, I understand that what you guys are doing as massage therapists are ultimately there to help a client or a patient, however you want to call it. Do you guys ever feel weird about getting excited about a complex case? Like, I get excited about treating a client, and yes, my goal is to help them, but is it weird that you feel excited with someone's pain and discomfort?
My answer is no.
It's funny, we both have a different answer. I'm going to let her explain why her answer is no, but my answer is yes.
Well, I think it's one of the reasons I love working on college massage, because our clients are medically complex with what they bring in, and also complex at that period of time in many, many ways, because they're going through so much. And I find it really interesting. It keeps me on my toes. It keeps me on my toes in terms of the therapeutic relationship, but also in terms of manual skills. How to progress a treatment so it's most impactful for a given client. All of that stuff is endlessly fascinating. And I love, love, love that no two clients ever present the same. So I'm always dealing with something new. So complex makes me happy.
So for all of her reasons are why what I have to remind myself of, because yes, I get that feeling of like, ooh, that's a weird thing to feel, because when I do get a complex case, sometimes I do get excited about it, because actually it isn't my day to day. I don't have a niche like oncology massage like Janet does.
What I'm kind of saying is, like, yes, you're helping somebody, but you are also gaining so much out of this thing, out of this person's pain or this person's hurting or this. It's a really weird mind fuck in my mind.
It is weird, but what I remind myself of,
but you are helping.
That getting this person, yes, I'm helping them, and yes, I'm helping myself, but what I'm thinking of it as to not feel as weird about being excited about a complex case is the more exposure I have to the complex cases, the more that I learn, the more I'm able to help more and more people. Janet has already said that. So it does feel weird for a second. I mean, she's gotten over that, obviously.
Like, I'm helping you, yes, but your complexity, your condition, your hurt, your suffering is helping me grow. Like, it's a weird mind play. But what do I know? Hence, I'm
See,
mad.
Now my thought bubble's going mad, Mark. I don't know what to say.
Thought bubbles.
You made me think.
You know, hence I'm inactive, man. I can't do with all this stuff anymore. Like, I play too, all this stuff goes in my mind way too much. And then I walk away. I don't know if I walk away feeling better about myself as a person. It's really fucked up. I'm the first to admit, it's really, really weird.
Janet, I would love to, like, invite you into a glimpse of, like, living with an overthinker.
Everything's
complicated. It's so interesting because I learn things about him still. 15 years into our relationship, and I still learn things about him. But we were getting a late night snack last night. Okay,
it was a beverage. I was getting a drink.
Yes. So we went to the kitchen to make nacho dip together. Okay, so we like walked to, I mean, I say together, this sounds really weird because we live in a condo, but
the kitchen.
when we decide to have a snack together at night after the kids go to bed, for all of you that are going to come at me for eating late, fine, do it. But after the kids go to bed, sometimes we'll like make a snack, we'll watch TV or a movie or something together, like just quiet. And whenever we go to make a snack, for whatever reason, even though I'm going to make it, he always comes with me and he sits on a little footstool in our kitchen. Anyway, so
nice.
We go to the kitchen, we're like making this snack and he's like, I'm really thirsty. And I was like, yeah, I'm going to bring some drinks with the nacho dip. Like I had drinks ready to go.
Nothing's ever easy.
And he said, but I'm thirsty right now and I don't want to open the drink you're bringing me because then I feel I won't have enough drink when we're watching the movie.
It's not that. It's a little even weirder than that. It's I'm thirsty right now. I can open up this can of iced tea. I can slam it and it will satisfy my thirst, but I actually didn't care about the iced tea itself. Do you see what I'm saying? So I feel like I'm just wasting this can of iced tea because I'm not really enjoying
it. I hadn't gotten to that point.
Okay.
Yet.
Well, I'm not really enjoying it for what it is. So anyway, it's so confusing. It's not like I can just get a drink and enjoy a drink or quench my thirst. It is all this other shit that comes along with something simple.
The point was, while sitting on the footstool, it took him at least 4 minutes. And the whole time I'm paused, I'm not even making the dip anymore. I'm just looking at him, trying to decide what to drink because he's thirsty right now.
Yeah.
And I was like, but if you want the iced tea, just have the iced tea. He's like, but then I feel like I'm wasting the iced tea because I won't enjoy it because I'm going to slam it. And I was like, then have some water. But I don't really want the water.
I don't know where it comes from. This is really more about food than anything else. I have a really, really strange relationship with food.
That's true.
Anything to do with food, it's just really, everything's a fucking process. And I don't know where that comes from.
Do you see why I make the snacks, Janet?
I won't even explore it.
Because I'll just go in the kitchen and say, these are the ingredients we have. Okay, I know what to make with this.
So then sometimes when I'm thinking about treatment, then like all of this weird stuff comes into my mind. And I think that's just all part of me trying to figure out how I feel about things in the moment and then deciding, is this something that I really want to feel again? Or is this something I don't want to feel again? And so on.
It's an interesting point though, Mark, because we get so much information from our clients, physical and otherwise, and how to turn that into a treatment. It is not easy. It really isn't. It's a tough part of our job, and I don't think we give it enough attention. Mm-hmm.
And I mean, the courses that Mark teaches are most of them incredibly technical in nature because that's a very black and white. He understands the tech, like I understand biomechanics. I can teach you biomechanics. I understand arthrokinematics. I can teach you that. And like, I'm not saying he doesn't understand people or the human aspect of it, but there's less overthinking and thought processing going into something technical because he's very confident in the technical skills. So he does great teaching all the technical classes. Whereas like, I guess working with cancer patients where you've got somebody different, even with the same person coming in every week, that might be a little more thought having to go into something that might drive you crazy.
Well,
right?
Because then I just spiral in my head and and that's never a fun place to be in deep.
It sure speaks to the variety of work that massage therapists can do.
Yeah.
You know? Like it's really not the same job that Mark and I are doing. There are overlaps, but it's so diverse what massage offers. And I think it's confusing to the public because they don't know who to go to for what because mm-hmm. we're all so different.
Yeah. And I've had a lot of people say to me that they don't like to, I'm putting in air quotes, like waste money trying to find the right therapist. And I have to try to get them to flip that mindset. Like, it's not wasting, like this is the investment you have to put in. You know, you don't have to settle for the first therapist you see because you've already paid them. That's like, you know, settling for being a social worker because you put that investment in. It's you go see somebody, they didn't quite work for you. That doesn't mean massage doesn't work for you. It means this therapist didn't work for you. And the public needs to understand how much of a variety and how much diversity there is amongst all of us. Mark and I treat completely differently. And when we started working here in the same space, it was actually great because sometimes I'd get a patient that I'm like, I am not right for you, but there's a guy here that can definitely help you. And, you know, and vice versa, you know, he was working with this like 18-year-old client. Now, granted, she was an athlete. And so she would come in for like athletic injuries and stuff. And that was great for him. But on the other hand, she also wanted like the wellness, the relaxation, all these other components in it. And after treating her so many times, he was like, you got to go see Amanda. And once she started seeing me, actually, I felt like she was just able to relax a little more because it just wasn't the right fit with her and Mark, although he did help her get over some, you know, like shoulder, ankle, hip, whatever, that kind of stuff. Then when she started seeing me, it just made a lot more sense. Or, you know, I've had a patient who, you know, injured herself like deadlifting or something. She prefers to see me because her and I have a good rapport. But anytime she comes in with an injury that I'm like, this is so outside of my skill set, I will ask her, are you cool if we consult with Mark? Can I bring him in? I've brought him in a couple times. And yeah, just it works really well.
I love that, the skill set idea. You know, we each have to be really honest with ourselves, what our skill set is. And there's lots of things that I don't do. If someone calls me and they're a runner, I tell them I don't see them because I don't have the practice in working with people like that. I don't feel that my hands know what to do. So I always refer them to someone else. And no shame in that, right? That's why we're all here and offer so much that's so different.
What do you think about the idea of, and I recognize from a legislative standpoint why we cannot say we specialize, but would you like that to be a thing one day for massage?
Yeah, it's a big question. I think if we go down that path, we have to have really clear parameters on what specialized is.
Yeah.
So for instance, in the States, there's the Society for Oncology Massage, and they don't offer certification per se. What they do is they give a baseline of what educational courses have to meet in order to be called one of their preferred courses. So I've just had my courses approved by them, which was a really, really, really long process. But that's the best we've got in oncology massage. And I don't know, there would be so many layers of infrastructure to really define what's a specialty in any given area. It's complex.
Would you like to see that be a thing though, or you're happy where it is?
I would love it. I would love the public to be able to know that a given massage therapist has advanced and recognized training in anything, whether it's oncology or sports massage or working with the geriatric population. I think it will ultimately, over the long term, help to clarify what we have to offer as massage therapists.
I feel like a lot of the general public actually thinks that that is a thing. I don't know about you guys, but I know that clinics I've worked at will get calls like, do you have anybody who does prenatal massage? Do you have anybody who does? And yes, there are people who their practices focus on something like, as you said, prenatal or geriatric or working with children. But when they would call and say, do you have somebody who does prenatal? This one clinic I was working at, any prenatal client that called, I just became the prenatal person. Mm-hmm. And this was before I had done any additional training, but it was because I actually enjoyed working with a pregnant population. I was very comfortable doing it. I had been pregnant. I felt like I understood the experience a little bit. Like, I was totally fine doing it. And there was a lot of therapists who were like, nah, like, I don't want to work with a pregnant person.
Yeah, it's the same idea. Like, I just did a TMJ course on the weekend that had about 20 people in the room, and probably a quarter of them were like, yeah, I don't know. My clinic just gives me all the TMJ people, and I don't even know freaking why. and I just suddenly became the TMJ person at the clinic.
Well, I mean, at least they're being proactive and now taking courses and trying to help serve their clientele a little more.
Absolutely. And think of the experience that they have and that they bring to their clients, because they don't just work with one TMJ situation per year. They work with dozens and dozens. So everything gets more nuanced about patient treatment, Remex, you name it, just get better at it.
Yeah, absolutely. I want to talk to you about your courses then. Yeah. So how does this happen? When did you decide you were going to develop a course? Did you do this on your own? Did you have partners? How long have you been teaching?
Right. So under a year. Yeah, this is brand new. I have absolutely no experience teaching or in developing course material. So I knew after creating the textbook that I could use that material to create a course. So I partner with Seminars for Health out of Calgary, and they do all the logistics. And the course that I offer is mine. I developed it. I own it. And it was scary. Again, you know, on the cliff, right? Because I'd never taught before. And I created a four-day course. And it's 4 8-hour days. It's really intense. It's lots of fun. But when I started doing that last March, that was a first for me. So
are you telling me that the class that I sat in and filmed part of your lecture was one of your first lectures ever?
No. Yeah. It was my third.
That's incredible to me. Like, you seemed so comfortable. It was so like, I actually felt like I learned something in that like 15 minutes that I just sat in on your class. So, I mean,
well, that's really good to hear. That's the whole goal of it. Yeah.
Well, good for you. I had no idea that that was something that was brand new. Now I understand why I didn't know you before, though, because I was like, what? You teach and you teach something so like, so specific. I just couldn't believe I hadn't heard of you before. But now I understand because you were just
it's brand new.
Yeah.
Yeah. So the course is it's a certified course, which means that there is a final written exam, which people are extremely well prepared for, I must admit. And the course is divided into 1 and a 3-day course. So the 1-day course is focused on the knowledge necessary to provide safe massage. So people can take just that 1-day course and be more oncology massage aware. And for those who want to move beyond that and maybe focus their practice on oncology massage, the 3-day course that builds on that 1-day course, we really move towards effective and rehabilitative massage. And we look at how to treat for radiation density and fibrosis and neuropathies after chemotherapy, how to use the stages of healing to work with scars. And one thing that has come up a lot in the courses is people want a timeline. They want to be told, you can work on someone who's had surgery as long as it's 10 days after surgery or 6 weeks or 1 minute or whatever it is. The way I teach is just to give a very strong framework of information so that when students leave and they go back to their practice and they have the complexity that comes at them, they always have something really solid to refer back to so that they can critically think their way through the presentation of the client and how to treat them. So that's the goal of the courses, and they're fun, I hope. That's my goal too.
And they're fun, I hope.
Yeah. And they're case study based. So with a 3-day course, small groups of 2 or 3 people each have their own case. And each case is a really detailed description of the person, the cancer, their lives, all the other stresses going on. And everything we learn in the course, the groups have to apply to their client, and they have to develop a treatment plan for that client and then present it to the class. So by the end of the 4 days, what people really get the idea is that it doesn't matter what kind of cancer a person has or what kind of treatment they're going through, but that we, with the knowledge we get in the class, can work with absolutely anybody at any stage of their cancer, including just before the diagnosis comes through and right up to the end of life.
You were going to ask a question, Mark.
Oh, I just wanted you to also give out some information as to where they can find, anyone can find more information about your courses, your book, and all of your... All the places where you live on the interweb.
All the places. I don't live in that many places, I have to tell you. So you can go to my website, which is janetpennyrmt.ca. And there's information on where to purchase the book. What I have up there now, unfortunately, the discount code for 2024 is only available through a U.S. purchaser. So hopefully within the next few days, people will be able to buy it in Canada. So I don't recommend using that code yet. Just wait a bit. I'm waiting to hear from the publisher. And for the courses, we have 2 courses in Calgary this year, 2 in Edmonton, 1 in Toronto, and 1 in Ottawa. And people can register for those or get more information through Seminars for Health.
Very cool. And I'm excited that when you're going to be teaching your course here in Toronto, as I said, Seminars for Health contacted us here at Con Ed, and they're going to be using this space. So yeah, I will probably get to see you again, because I mean, one of us has to come here and unlock the door for you. So I'll do that.
I appreciate that. I made a little quiz before we finish up. It's, do you want to find out if you're oncology massage aware or not?
Amanda wants to.
I'm like so nervous now. Sure. Go ahead.
Right. So yes or no answers. Okay. There's 4 questions. Ooh. So if your client asks if massage can spread cancer, are you ready to give an evidence-informed answer?
No.
Okay. Do you know the common side effects of chemotherapy, radiation, and hormone therapy? And if you do you know how to adapt massage?
No.
Okay. Are you aware of how cancer treatments can impact the lymphatic system?
Somewhat. Is that an allowable answer?
No, it's a yes, no.
Oh, then no.
And do you know how to adapt your massage treatment to reduce the risk of your client developing lymphedema?
Come on. We all know the answer to that one's going to be no now. Now I realize I am not oncology aware.
Going to open the door, are you? You're going to stay.
You know what, though, Amanda? You're very brave to do it. I really put you on the spot. So I put that together only just to give people some idea of the kinds of things that present and what we need to know. So if you find out you're not oncology massage aware, all you need to do is a little research and fundamentally just be really curious about what your client brings in and how that can impact the treatment that you're going to offer. sure.
That's awesome. Yeah. And for anybody who was thinking of taking the course, as I said, I sat in for maybe 15, 20 minutes. There was one portion of Janet's lecture. You know, I asked her, is there something that you think would be most interesting? So anyone who has a premium membership to Massage Therapy Media, by the way, that little snippet of her lecture lives on the, I think it's the Classroom Sessions channel. Yeah. If I'm wrong, I'm sorry. But I did film her doing like 15, 20 minutes of a lecture. And as I said, I would have had no idea that you hadn't taught before, but it was not dull. It was very informative. And you're actually very delightful to listen to. You have a very calming voice. I was like literally enjoying the lecture. I'm like, right, I'm supposed to be working. I'm filming. I'm not attending a class right now. So,
thanks for saying that, Amanda. I know when my clients used to tell me I was very calming, I would come home and tell my kids, and like it would take them an hour to get off the floor. They were laughing so hard.
Oh yeah, no. Who you are in the world is not who your kids see you as. Like I like to think I'm pretty like funny, kind of cool, whatever. Like my kids will tell you I'm a dork that tells bad jokes, but you know, maybe I actually am a dork that tells bad jokes and. Nobody else is brave enough but my own children to tell me the truth.
I think we just have to hope that we live long enough for them to see how awesome we are.
Yes. Yes, absolutely.
Thank you for all you do, Amanda and Mark. You add a lot to the profession. I appreciate it.
Well, we are super happy that you took time to talk to us today. And we'll make sure that we include all the links so people can learn more about you. And hopefully, by the time this episode is published, maybe there will be a discount code or something for Canadians. And if so, you can let me know and we'll include that in the notes for the episode as well.
I will do so.
Awesome.
Right on. Thanks for having me. This has been good. You guys have been listening to Two Massage Therapy. In a microphone. Peace.